Good morning. It's time for the Clay County Corner, coming to you live from the historic Clay County Courthouse in Salina, Tennessee. For the next hour, the Clay County Corner will inform you of what's happening in our community. Sit back and enjoy the program.
Good morning, everyone. It's great to be back on the airwaves again here with the Clay County Corner here on WVFB FM 101.5 Kicks Country, where we come to you live and in living color on your radio dial each Thursday morning at 9 o'clock with a rebroadcast this evening along about 6. And then, of course, these shows are streamed on the Delmhala Horizon newspaper website, so there are various ways you can listen to us here, and like I said, it's a pleasure being here each Thursday morning, and we hope that you're gladly welcoming us into your home this morning. You can sit back, relax, and enjoy the next hour. Got some interesting things going on this morning. I know Mr. Roy Henson's here with me this morning. We've got it looks like it may be just about the only event we've been able to pull off this year with our sesquicentennial celebration, with all of the rules and regulations and governmental orders that came down throughout the summer. We weren't able to, gather around in big crowds because a lot of it involved, being inside buildings and having people in meetings and things. So, we couldn't do that, but group down Hermitage Springs, what's the official name of that group down there?
The FCC committee down there.
They used to be the Home Demonstration Club, they called it, through the University of Tennessee. And they kind of came up with an idea where they'd like to have a little thing, call it a walk through history. And it's taking place down at Hermitage Springs. But it's countywide, and it's sponsored by the Sesquicentennial Committee, and we're going to have lots of stuff there. We're going to be talking about that a little bit more here in a minute. And we've got, of course, our birthdays and anniversaries today. Got a few other things to talk about. Of course, I know we're going to spend a little bit of time on the COVID thing here before the program is over. I think Taylor Miller from over at the chamber office is coming by, and she'll bring by a little bit of news of things that's going on over there. But with that, I guess we want to thank everyone that makes this show possible. That is the Three Star Program, the Chamber of Commerce, and all of the great folks that advertise on this radio show each week. And also, while we're at, we'll remind everyone that we'll be giving away a ice cream cake from over at the Dairy Queen. We'll read the names off about halfway through the show if I don't forget it, and then we will draw a name out and present that, and you go over by the chamber office and pick up your little Dairy Queen card and take it over and trade it in for a birthday cake. So we've got that going on, and we'll get back just in a minute, and we'll talk a little bit about what we've got going on down to Hermitage Springs this weekend. With that, we'll be back just in a few minutes.
Let's face it, we are not the most patient people on earth. We've become accustomed to having instant solutions to most any need. Macon Bank and Trust now offers an instant solution for your spending needs with Card at Once, an instant issue MasterCard debit card. Come in, open your account, and walk out with your new debit card. No waiting. Macon Bank and Trust, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. Come grow with us.
You may not realize how important three letters can be. For a patient who needs type A, B, or O blood, these letters can mean life, but there simply aren't enough people giving blood. Without more donors, hospitals may not have the blood needed to save lives. That's why the American Red Cross needs people to help restore the A's, B's, and O's that are depleting each day. You are the missing type patients need. Visit redcrossblood.org/missing types or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to make your donation appointment today.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness, with a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists. They serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
You may not realize how important three letters can be. For a patient who needs type A, B, or O blood, these letters can mean life. But there simply aren't enough people giving blood. Without more donors, hospitals may not have the blood needed to save lives. That's why the American Red Cross needs people to help restore the A's, B's, and O's that are depleting each day. You are the missing type patients need. Visit redcrossblood.org/missing types or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to make your donation appointment today.
Welcome back, everyone. As I said earlier, I don't know if we've got anything else we want to talk about before we get to Mr. Roy. Let's see if we've got any... If we've got anything in history today that looks like there's anything really, really big time. Let's see here. All right. This is in 1879. We all like this. Thomas Edison perfected the carbonized cotton filament light bulb,
yeah,
which we call now the incandescent bulb, which has been lighting up the world for a long, long time. And then on this day, I think this is the day that President John F. Kennedy came on TV and addressed the nation about the Cuban Missile Crisis. So those of us that were of about 17, 18 years old then, that had 1A on our draft cards, was a kind of a scary day for all of us, because I know we had our missiles aimed toward them, and they had theirs aimed toward us. We had missiles over in Europe, and I think we had all them aimed at each other, so it was kind of a scary day. But I think Mr. Roy probably remembers that day also.
Oh, yes. Gray hair to prove.
Well, let's talk a little bit about our thing coming up this weekend.
Okay. We've had to give up on most programs. I've talked to Cannon Mayor, and he said, cancel this, we've canceled that. He finally went to the State Department. They said, well, if you have it outdoors and wear a mask and watch your distance, it's pretty safe. Indoors, we couldn't possibly do it, so we're working on that. What we're trying to emphasize is costumes and exhibits that primarily cover from the early 1800s to the early 1900s, and we're trying to emphasize as much interactive as possible. When you go to the museum, almost without fail, they say, don't touch anything. And sometimes it gets more mean. It's if you break it, you pay for it. But the idea here is we'll have about 20 exhibits. I'll go through some of those just a moment. But the point is, as many as they can, they're going to get their hands on it. So we're going to probably have some gloves in case we transmit something and watch your distance. We can put family groups together. We've got some teams that are supposed to be police cops to separate the other groups and keep the distance if we can. Here's some of the things we're going to be doing. We'll go these in a couple of stages. We have a blacksmith. He'll be coming in demonstration.
Well, wait, you just said the word blacksmith. Now, how many young folks really know what a blacksmith even is?
They may think it's bordering on racial, and it has nothing to do with it. They worked They were the metal workers of the day. They made hinges. They put corks in horseshoes. They made all sorts of metal. The only metal you had, door latches, everything out there was the metal working.
I guess, you know, a lot of, I know youngsters have, a lot of them have pitched horseshoes and that kind of thing. But, and, of course, around in this area here, I guess most of our blacksmiths didn't make horseshoes. They made mule shoes.
That's right.
Which were a lot smaller. But I think most of them.
And even ox shoes, two pieces.
Yeah, and they wouldn't maybe realize that animal shoe, that steel shoe that went on the animal's foot, was to protect their feet and keep them from cracking and that kind of thing when they were working
and
walking.
When you watched them, you thought it hurt, but they go through that dead cork and put the nail, and they get skilled.
And they actually came in just a bar of steel.
Yeah.
Just a straight bar of steel. Probably inch and a half by a half inch.
Yeah.
And that blacksmith, he took that piece of just a bar, and he worked, formed, heated, cooled, made holes through it, just and formed it into a horseshoe. I mean, it didn't start out as anything.
And you can make it to fit the size of your mule's feet as well.
I think, you know, most families had a blacksmith within the family back in those days, and they had them a little blacksmith shop out there. And they would keep one sample of each one of the mule shoes.
Yeah.
So next year when those wore out and they were ready to make the next ones, then they would have a sample there to go by and know, kind of like ordering them up like we would a pair of shoes today, given their size.
And our modern roads wore them out a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Working in the field, you didn't do much damage to those shoes, but on gravel roads and pavement, they wore the corks up pretty fast.
Of course, there were quite a few of so-called river bottom farms that had a lot of gravelly soil,
yeah,
which would do the same thing. But, you know, and most of the tools that farmers had on their farms were handmade. You know, even though they had, you know, like they would buy the frame for a turning plow. The turning plow had plow points on it, and a lot of times you could buy pre-made ones, but early on, when that first one came on it, you had to make your own. You had to make the various plows that went out there. And I know, I just going through one little thing I had hanging on the wall over in my building that I'll take it down there, and it is a thing called an eye hole. You know, most of us grow up with a gooseneck hoe.
Yeah.
But the eye hoe was one that was made by the blacksmith on the farm, wasn't it? But sorry to interrupt you, but go ahead.
But he'll be enjoying that, and one of our local guys is volunteered to come. He says, for that exhibit, he wants to work and learn how to do that. We have a grist mill that will be provided, I guess, by the local people. In this case, it'll be moved about 100 yards.
Okay, now, tell them what the grist mill is.
The grist mill was critical. They were all over this county, powered by water wheels at first, then by steam engines, then by your two cycle, and finally the pulleys off of tractors, which are very, very portable. And so those things, the grist mill had the same power as a sawmill lots of times. You had your
well, now what did it do?
Okay, you would take a turn, that means a bushel of corn, on a horseback. It would grind it into cornmeal or grits or mush, course, for chicken feed. Then you'd have to sift out, and that's where you get a cornmeal sifter to sift out that. The grist mill owner was provided with payment in kind. He got meal. It was called a toll. And so we have toll roads, and then we have toll there. And some it ranged from anywhere from a fifth to a seventh. Interesting enough, my dad was a miller, and Mom always got a mix of everybody's meal of all different consistencies, so we never knew what kind we were getting. You know, some like it coarse, some like it fine. But my dad would bring it home mixed, and we'd do it that way. Then we have, additionally, a cider mill, and a lot of people don't appreciate that. You didn't just make a drink. You made a drink that you could ferment and have a hard cider, and then you'd make vinegar. So sometimes the apples were a terrific resource. You make not only fried apple pies.
You know, and there was this various kind of apples, you know, the early June apples, which were usually a sweet apple, all the way down toward the end of the season, which was the one we call the winesap apple, which if you bit into one of those out in the apple orchard, you really didn't like that one. But long about Christmas time, after you put them in the cellar and let them mellow out, as we would say, they became edible.
And then one called Arkansas Black would be the same way. I remember as a kid, we'd go back in the field, down in the grass at Christmas time. They weren't frozen. You get those apples out, and then they're ready to eat. They've been on the ground probably 6 weeks already, protected, if the animal didn't get them out there. We'll have, in addition, household items. That's going to involve simple furniture, simple cooking tools, flat irons, and those kind of things. Our biggest display is probably going to be food preservation, because they didn't have refrigeration. They didn't have electricity, so you had to dry food, ferment it, or process it, or keep it in an unheated room. My grandmother, for example, put apples in her upstairs attic, and she knew how many quilts to put on a cold night. So that's how they kept them in unheated places. That would be also true for pumpkins and potatoes, to keep them fresh as long as they could. We'll be probably given samples of some of these preserved things if we can convince the people that that would be good to do. We also have a quilting demonstration. This was, during that period of time, was a really good way to keep you warm overnight by a number of homemade quilts. We have a couple of people working on those. Hope they don't get their fingers stuck with that when they miss the thimble.
Oh, okay. Now, Roy, with the quilts, you know, most of the, of course, a lot of the material was started out, you know, just as cotton. They'd use the spinning wheels to make their materials and things. And when they would make, you know, their shirts, their breeches, that type thing, there would always be little scraps left over. And those little scraps became artwork eventually, didn't they? When, you know, the women of the house, they would take those and they would cut them in various patterns.
Yeah, very artistic.
And very artistic, some of them in the shape of flowers, all these kind of things. And now if you can find one of those quilts now, and a lot of them were just called rag quilts.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were basically just made from the leftover rags.
Just the leftovers. When the shirt was worn out, pieces of it were used too. So it was really a skill, and they're very expensive nowadays too.
And it was also a community type thing.
A quilting, but you'd have women, you'd roll the quilt on a frame, they could work on it. Well, there's two kinds. One that you hang from the ceiling, you could roll it up out of the way. We'll be using one this time that sits on horses on the ground, and you can work on both sides. And you roll the quilt as you stitch it. The mark of a good quilt was the person had the very small, close-knit stitches that showed the finer work like this. We have pictures of my great-grandmother's quilt made in 1899, and she did names of my grandmother and her two sister and brother, and they had to be there because the youngest kids were not on the quilt, so about 1899. The cousin has it, says you can't have it.
Okay, now, Roy, let's throw out another piece of equipment that would have been out in the backyard at everybody's house, the wash kettle. Have you got any of those lined up?
We'll be taking wash kettle and show them, because that's how you did the laundry. You heated your wood there, and then you had your washboard and your clothesline. And a little bit later, you had your ring of wash, which you actually operated by hand, but this kettle.
Let's get back to that wash kettle a little bit.
That kettle was a lifesaver.
It was a multi-use utensil, wasn't it?
You made soap.
Okay.
You made alpha butter. You cooked beets and processed things. And, of course, laundry was probably a weekly activity. And they didn't have any clothes, so you didn't wash them every day like my wife said.
And if you can't remember your mother making lye soap, you have missed out on part of the tradition in this area.
And the problem,
and the cracklings that came from when you made.
We have a lady who took the COVID and was going to make soap. We're going to miss that particular demonstration because of the current situation like this. We've got quite a few other things. We're going to have a display of carpenter tools. One of the favorites I've seen is the kids can take and use a bracing bit and drill a hole. But more difficult is the old auger, which you had to turn by hand and two people to line them up.
It was just a T-shaped drill bit.
And you couldn't change the bit size in it. You had to have an auger of every different size. And so we'll have those available. We want the people to put their hands on it and see what a skill. You had to learn the skill like this. Then we're going to try to have some logging tools and farm tools showing some of those. How they were working as well.
You know, that auger was a very, very important instrument too, Rand, yeah. Because, you know, back early on, when you built a barn, of course, now people build post and beam homes because they're, you know, they think they're kind of fancy homes. But back in those days, you had to take that auger up on a big beam, drill a hole through it, and then whittle you out a peg to go through it to put a barn together.
Hold the corners together. It worked out very good like that, huh?
Let's take a little short break, Roy. We'll be back just in a minute, and we'll continue on this.
Macon Bank and Trust offers a new and better checking account with free e-checking. Enroll for e-statements to avoid a $6 monthly minimum balance charge and enjoy free ATM cash withdrawals at some ATMs across the nation. Free online banking and mobile banking with mobile deposit. Free online bill pay, MasterCard debit card, and 50 free checks at opening. Talk e-checks with us today. Macon Bank and Trust, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. Come grow with us. Third-party data or messaging fees may apply.
You may not realize how important three letters can be. For a patient who needs type A, B, or O blood, these letters can mean life. But there simply aren't enough people giving blood. Without more donors, hospitals may not have the blood needed to save lives. That's why the American Red Cross needs people to help restore the A's, B's, and O's that are depleting each day. You are the missing type patients need. Visit redcrossblood.org/missing types or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to make your donation appointment today.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness. With a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists, they serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Tri-County Electric offers their member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
All right, everybody in the car, let's go.
What are we going to do first when we get there, Mom? Go for a hike?
Sure.
What about canoeing? Can we go canoeing, too?
I don't see why.
How long does it take to get to the forest?
It's not that far, sweetie.
Are we there yet?
Yep, we're here.
Already?
It's a short drive from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Welcome back, everyone. Before I get back to Roy, I've been off for 2 weeks here, and just got all kinds of useless information I've built up during that period of time. But I ran across this thing the other day for all of you June brides. That was the traditional time to get month. To get married was during that month. And back in the olden days, this may have been all the way back to the hill country here and everywhere around, usually every year when the creeks thawed out and everything kind of warmed up a little bit, along about May sometime, people get out and take their annual bath. And so, and if you were a young lady getting ready to get married, you got to thinking, you know, well, May, it won't be too long till since I've had a bath. So, you know, that June became that traditional month because they still smell pretty good in June. But then, they got thinking, too, a little bit scary. I might ought to take something with me, maybe to kind of help a little bit. So they started carrying a big bouquet of flowers with them into the, when they got married, so that their husband-to-be could smell the flowers instead of them. So that's to hide the body odor, they brought in the bouquet of flowers. And then one more thing in there. We've all heard the statement of don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Okay, and that goes back to the wash kettle. When it came Saturday night and time for the bath, they'd fire up a big fire with a kettle full of water out in the backyard and get it real big and hot, and then carry it inside and put it in a wash tub. And Daddy started off. He got his bath first. And then probably the oldest son, and it worked its way all the way down, and the wife got to take a bath next to last. And then by that time, you couldn't see through the bath water because it was getting kind of murky there. So, and the last thing to get washed was the baby. And so it came from, you had to be careful because you couldn't see the baby down in the bath water. So you had to be careful and don't throw the baby out with the bath water. Go ahead, Roy, with something serious now.
Okay. There are four more things, at least. Our lady, Miss White, with the Historical Commission will be selling books and shirts that were planned for this countywide. They'll be available given the history of the county and all. The local church goes back to 1840, and we'll have them presenting rosters, including some of our own kinfolks that we've discussed. They'll be
okay. Now that, which church is that?
That'll be the Hermitage Springs Church of Christ.
Okay.
And it has 180 years, so it preceded the county by 30, 40 years. Started some more churches.
And I know, Roy, you showed me a page out of that. I think they had copied it.
Yeah.
Some of the most beautiful cursive writing that you have ever seen.
Which I kid.
It looked like it was done with some type of machine.
Yeah, very good. And have rosters of different time periods, which will catch a lot of our kinfolks. That'll be presented for the genealogy. We have a genealogy study, if this gentleman can come with the spirit of the COVID, with land grants in the area. We're going to have two or three sources of local history. One lady's going to have clothing. Her family is connected with the store and old clothing from about 1890 to 1910. A wonderful collection of women's and children's clothing of that time period. Our biggest display may well be among those be the natural food, because before they had orchards, they depended on pawpaws, persimmons, wild berries, and of course they got the nuts and the wild hemp. So they had the game and all these things. And later on, of course, they had domestic animals and had their own orchards made.
Okay, now the pawpaw. I can remember quite numerous numbers of trees that were wild out in the forest here, and I don't know if they're that many of them still around or not, but the pawpaw was a delicacy. I think somewhere along the line, I think I saw that their nickname was the Louisiana banana.
And the Ohio banana.
And
the
Ohio
well.
Banana. So, and they had kind of a banana taste, but and I know, I think maybe there was a pawpaw tree in my grandpa's front yard. But that is something, you know, those natural plants that grew here, that were here when the white man came,
they were here already.
And they were basically growing wild, but then they kind of domesticated them, and they improved over the years. And of course, a lot of them are still around today that grew from these things.
And then you had your persimmons, which was another delicacy, more often by possums than raccoons,
and you had to wait till a certain time before you eat persimmons, didn't you?
Yeah, if not, you could have your tongue twisted.
You had to wait till after the frost.
After the frost, they were soft.
They had to get frost on them, and then they became sweet and just delicious, didn't they?
And so, along with those, you would had all the kind of nuts, from walnuts to wild pecans. Even what they call chinkapins, which is an unusual nut, as well as hazelnuts. The lady doing this, we're trying to convince her that hers is the most important, because in the early days, it was. That's where you got your food. You had your game and fish, your migratory waterfowl, and all those nuts and fruits out there.
Okay, Ron, let's take another short break here. I'm going to read my birthdays off, and we're going to come back and continue on with this. We've got a few birthdays today, and remember at the end of the show, we will be giving away one of those ice cream cakes, and the number to call is 243-5574. And celebrating birthdays during this period of time, Mr. Ronnie Short celebrated his 51st birthday. His dad called in to wish him a happy birthday. And also, Miss Teresa Gass, celebrating a birthday. And I'd like to wish Matt and Jessica Barlow a happy anniversary. Mr. Joey Coe, happy 54th birthday. And also, Rosanna Webb celebrated a birthday this week. And Mr. George Melton. And I think maybe George and Betty may have celebrated an anniversary this past week. I'm not sure on that one. Mr. Roy, you know anybody celebrating a birthday here in the this week?
Not immediately, but we were benefit. We were drawn from those nice cakes. That was a nice thing back there. We appreciate that.
But with that, we'll take a little short break. We'll get back just in a minute, and we'll continue on with this conversation with Mr. Roy Henson this morning. We'll be right back.
Identity theft is the fastest growing crime in America, and fraud is a threat to all of us. That's why Macon Bank and Trust SecureLock makes great sense. This easy-to-use mobile app allows you to protect your debit card, turning it on and off as needed. And you can customize your card by setting certain permissions. Want to know more about how to protect yourself and your money? Then talk with us today. Macon Bank and Trust. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender. Come grow with us.
You may not realize how important three letters can be. For a patient who needs type A, B, or O blood, these letters can mean life. But there simply aren't enough people giving blood. Without more donors, hospitals may not have the blood needed to save lives. That's why the American Red Cross needs people to help restore the A's, B's, and O's that are depleting each day. You are the missing type patients need. Visit redcrossblood.org/missing types or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to make your donation appointment today.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness. With a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists, they serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, operated by those we serve.
Welcome back, everyone. Well, Mr. Roy, we're back, and you know we were sitting here kind of off camera talking, and you know we were talking about, I mentioned something a minute ago about the eye hole and that type of thing, and Mr. Roy comes back and says, "Well, now, you know where the hoe cake came from." Now, those of us in this area know what a hoe cake is, and that is cornbread cooked on top of the stove. Well, now, Roy, I think you had an interesting tidbit there on that.
One way this developed, it worked in the field, and you'd use the blade of your hoe as your cook. You put your, pour your batter and just held over the fire, and so you get the term hoe cake.
So they just poured the batter out on top of the big metal hoe, and used it for a baking pan.
Each person had one. They could cook them together, eat those. Okay.
You had to be careful how much batter you poured on there, so it wouldn't run off the side.
And if you burn it, it was your own fault, of course, yes. So some of those ideas. Mr. Thomas and I, our experience with Pioneer Toys, having gone to Smoky Mountain several years, and I've presented toys to thousands and thousands of kids in the public schools including Monroe County and others. We'll have some, my grandson and others be sharing those tools, toys that have been around a long, long time. We're going to have a lady also coming with, who does crocheting. She said she'll come and set up and let's look at it. I hope she would do that because my grandmother did that as well.
Okay, now let's get back to the quilting just a second. We didn't really talk about what kind of a community affair that quilting was. You know, we've heard of, you know, quilting bees.
Yeah.
Kind of describe what might happen there in the, if you went into a house in the wintertime, you looked up at the ceiling in the living room, what would you probably see there?
Well, they'd had their quilt frame rolled up to the ceiling, and you could see the other side of it. But when they got ready to work, they'd just roll it down, and they could work on all four sides of it.
And then
roll the sides up to get to the middle of it.
And a number of ladies would be working on
6 or 8 or 10 people at a time. It was a great place to take the young people and show them how to work with the older people. It's a great passing on the information is great.
You know, with that many people, you would think maybe when they got done, it might be kind of a mess, wouldn't it? But everything, they all knew the patterns.
They knew what to do.
They all knew the patterns. They knew where they went. And
we have a local quilt that was made in a church where my mother did, and I'm trying to get the lady, let me get a picture of it, because it was made in a church group, and every person put their name on it. And she's a bit so close about getting that back right there.
Okay.
But the quilt of that was a wonderful thing. Okay, then what I'll be doing personally is working with fibers. I wanted to bring an antique loom. I've got one in the basement. I restore them. But it was a job to put it out, put it back up, and take it back in. I mean, it's big as a pickup truck bed. I've done it, but when I was younger, but I could handle it. I can't do that now. But we will have a demonstration of a spinning wheel. I can make a knotty thread, hardly better than that. We're going to show them how to take seeds out of cotton by hand. In fact, show them that in the time of slavery that a hard-working person could only pull out a pound of fiber in an entire day by taking the seeds out by hand. That's why we really appreciate the cotton gin that was developed.
Well, now you know what Eli Whitney said, don't you? Would you please get your cotton picking hands off my gin?
At first he figured that, but it really put cotton back on the map.
Now,
like
there that. Was a cone. Mr. I can remember seeing some of those when I was smaller. It kind of looked like a curry comb that you used to comb out the burrs off a horse or something. But it was used to comb out the seeds, wasn't it? For
some of those, yes. But and we're going to talk about 2 or 3 kinds of spinning. The old one's going to be, it's called a drop spindle. And all it is a wheel attached to a spindle. And you turn it and it spins by hand. The big one's called a Carolina walking wheel. It's nearly as tall as your head. And the purpose of the wheel is to turn the spindle. My kids at school said it was a wheel of fortune, but I said, now really, this was a tool, guys. And you hold the fiber to the end, it puts a spin, then you roll it up and do it again. So that would have been used both cotton and wool. Wool is much easier to spin. These fibers are much longer. There are also some flax wheels. One's offered for our program. Flax fibers look like a corn stalk, and the fibers can be 18 inches long. And it's entirely different. I can't spin those. But
okay, the flax, did we have much flax grown here in this
very,
area?
Very little, but that's how you got linen.
Right.
So sheets were primarily that.
Which was a very much more expensive
material.
It is. Material.
It's hard to grow it, and it had to, literally, they had to rot it. They call it redding. You would literally lay it out in the rain or throw it in the pond. And that would soften to get the fibers on the outside, get the stalks off and do that. So the most important thing would have been wool and cotton. And you could grow the cotton or raise a sheep. But you talk about a job. If you think about it, you had to first raise a sheep, shear the sheep, clean the wool, cart it, spin it, and then finally weave it. No wonder clothing was scarce and that they used it to go threadbare. It's hard to get.
Got passed down through quite a few years.
Hand-me-downs were pretty common. But the weaving process was the culmination of all of that preliminary work out there. So we'll let people put their hands on the spinning wheel and try their
make a knotty thread as well.
Okay, you know, and another thing, Roy, along that line is too, the braided rag rug, the throw rugs in a person's house would have also been made by taking just strips of material and kind of braiding it together.
Yeah. And then rolling it around.
And of course, we see those now that are kind of collector's items. A lot of folks like to have the old antique look in those, but they don't have to be done by hand, didn't they?
And actually, some of the old looms were turned into rug factories because you could set them up there and do it quickly. You'd roll your big rolls of fabric and then put your threads to hold them together. Let me see. We've left out a couple of things. The idea of foods, we can go to the store and purchase about anything we want if we can afford it. But in those days, they had to, and I guess killing hogs was a family and a community activity. First of all, they'd fatten the hogs in the woods. They'd fatten the fruit. They'd go out and eat beech nuts and chestnuts. When you brought the hogs in, you would have had to first put notches in their ears to identify years when he brought them in. And then they would probably, in a group place, kill all day long and hang them to dry and process. And then, of course, they were smoked and salted to cure the food. But hogs were cheap to raise.
And if you never got the pleasure of getting on hog killing day, as youngsters, when these animals were brought in and they were, of course, butchered, and then they would have what was the boiling pan, which was a big pan full of water with a big fire built under it, and they would take and put the carcass of the animal in that hot water, scald it real good, and as a youngster, your job was to take a butcher knife then and scrape all the hair off of the animal
without cutting it
or your fingers, and it was a it wasn't an easy job, but the youngsters got the pleasure of getting to do that. And then there was usually one of the members of the family that knew just exactly how to cut up that animal into the various parts, the hams, the shoulders, the pork chops, the parts to be used, and basically nothing was thrown away.
Except the squeal.
They never could figure out a way to use that. But, you know, everything from souse meat to sausage to various things. And that was another little thing that I saw when I was looking at some of these things about where chewing the fat came from. And that was when folks would gather in years and years ago, they're quite possibly, if the family wanted to brag a little bit, they'd have a few sides of meat hung up somewhere or another, and the men might gather around out in the smokehouse. And they would take their pocket and reach over and cut off a little bit of the dried, lean meat off of that, and kind of where the term chewing the fat came from. They'd be sitting outside chewing the fat.
Yeah, it's hard to appreciate that these people were innovative, that they were hardworking, and they found ways to make easier, but they did it because they had to. We're trying to emphasize in our program here, they didn't do these things just for fun. If you didn't save food, you didn't have it. If you didn't make the clothes, you didn't have it. If you didn't prepare for the winter with the quilts, it was really hard to get by. And so we want to emphasize the necessity. And they say necessity is the mother of invention, and that was probably the case there, where they learned how to do things efficiently. We're going to be using an apple peeler. And what was sort of funny, 2 weeks ago, I was doing this program. I showed the teenager how to do it. You pull off the apple, slice it, and share it with the public. Put the peels and the core in a bowl to make jelly. Well, unknown to me, his younger brother came out, and they peeled them and let everything fall off on the floor. Peels, apples, everything together. And I had to pick it all up like so much garbage. They missed the part of the lesson that they were just having fun when they're supposed to be peeling apples and showing that they were conserving.
Okay, and I know earlier you talked a little bit about preservation of foods. And I know we were talking about the hogs, the hog killing, and then the preservation of that meat. Really, it has become an art that's still around today. I know we go to the grocery store and we buy Harper's Best hickory smoked.
And sugar-cured.
Sugar-cured country hams. Yeah. And I can remember the old process of having a meat box out in the smokehouse. Now, part of the meat you would hang up on wires and build fires under it and smoke it to dry it, to preserve
it. To cure it, yeah.
To cure it. And then others, you would have that meat box. And I, best I remember, the bottom of the meat box would have rocks in there, just a bunch of stones put in the bottom of it. And then, I believe, a layer of ashes and then a layer of salt.
Yep.
And you would take maybe a shoulder and you would wrap it in a cloth sack and put it down in that salt and with the ashes all around it and everything. And it would stay there for, I don't know how long,
weeks,
for a week to cure it out a little bit and to make sure that it didn't spoil. And then, of course, there was also the scare. You know, those of us that grew up, we heard the word skippers. Don't let any skippers get in your country hands or your shoulders. And those were little, I guess, the
insects
that would get in there that could ruin it. And, you know, a lot of us, if you were growing up, usually you didn't get to eat the hams, because once those hams got cured, they were a delicacy, and they were prized by the folks that couldn't raise them, and they would come by and buy all the hams.
Or if it was served to the preacher.
Yeah, yeah, you have to save some for the preacher on Sunday every once in a while. But... but you know, preservation of some of the other foods, cabbage.
Yeah.
We preserved cabbage and called it
kraut. In fact, we have a pot of kraut we're making right now to put on display. It's about finished. And naturally, you just put salt in it, keep the flies off of it, and you process it keep from month to month.
Okay. Now what's the mixture there, Roy?
Well. To make the kraut, you put a layer of shredded cabbage, layer of salt, layer of cabbage, layer of salt. And if you don't like it, you can wash the kraut when it comes off to reduce the salt.
Yeah,
but if you keep it
increase or decrease the salinity of it.
If you take it out, the last salt, the kraut that comes out is so salty you'll almost have to wash it, because you can store it in the crock where it was made.
And when you put it in there, it swelled up, didn't it?
It does.
You had to take the lid off and dip part of it off.
It was
might start out with the 4 quarts, put it in there, and wind up having to can 8 quarts.
Yeah.
And another process, drying apples. I know you would take apples, and usually people would take them, you know, slice them up and put them out on the barn roof or the house roof. And let the sun dry.
And if they could, they'd put a screen bar over it because the flies would get to them.
To protect them.
If you didn't, sometimes you just had to eat them with fly specks on them. But that became a great source for those wonderful fried apple pies that people will fight over today just about.
And of course, just the normal canning process of heating and putting it in cans.
We'll be showing some of those with your zinc lids, some of those with your wire closures, to show the early processing, and then, of course, the modernly with the dome two-piece lid. In short, ours, and this phrase was coined by a lady who's going to be on here shortly, a walk-through. We'd like people to come out and walk through and see the different exhibits, put their hands on some of them. We hope to have samples of some of these, such as the cider, even the dried apples, for tasting. We think that'll be a good way to add to the enjoyment and the memories of what we're doing there.
And I do think we have just a little bit of old-fashioned music, maybe.
We were going to have that.
Based around Liz Strong and her family.
Yeah, yes. I found out she's sister to Joe. I didn't know that until, well, I should have, because I knew the family at Moss when I taught out there years and years ago. So we're going to have, we wouldn't ruin a square dance. I don't know that enough people can, but these folks can sure play music for it. That depends on who comes and what they want to do. But in short, the public's invited. We want people to enjoy it, but to appreciate their ancestors didn't have computers, didn't have electricity, didn't have ready-made clothing. They depended on their wits, and some of them were very, very smart. What I really appreciate are the coverlets that were woven on those looms and have been kept as treasures in the colors. We'll have a couple on display. And go back to the Civil War and before. Those are treasures that are kept like that.
Well, I know I'm looking at a little project I think maybe I can accomplish. I have an old antique rocking chair that at one time had the cane bottom in it, And over the years, someone had decided the best way to repair that was to use twisted trot line string and string the bottom of it. So I have some quarter-inch cane now, and I'm going to make an attempt to recane the bottom of this old chair. And so, you know, it things like that, like I said, the necessity, the things that you needed, your ladder back chairs, we see those now today, and, you know, if you run across one of the original ladder back chairs and you look at it, you think, golly, you know, how, you know, it looks, you know, hey, we want that. You know, where did this come about? Well, normally those things were made totally by hand.
With hand tools, like a drawing knife.
And I think I have one of those out there. And, you know, they would make those things, put them together, and, you know, and a lot of times they would be put together in such a manner that there probably would not be any kind of fasteners in them. There might
that
not
you
be
would
any
see.
Nails or anything
that you would see.
In them. And then the of course they were called the ladder back because of the back way they were made. It looked like a ladder. And then the bottoms of them usually would be bottomed with hickory bark, the inner bark on a hickory tree, which they would use then to bottom them. And of course, when you had a little bit of spare time in the wintertime, you were making a chair and you got to looking at them and you'd say, well, maybe I can make the bottom on this one look just a little bit different than just everybody else's. And they would go in and put designs in them, different patterns in the bottoms of their chairs and that type of thing. And, you know, we looked also toys, Roy. We I know one of the toys that you always bring around is the cornstalk dolls.
Yes.
Made from corn shucks. And you will see replicas of those made out of ceramic or something like everywhere now.
We're going to have some corn shuck dolls on display. So many uses, they didn't waste very much, the shucks. In fact, my wife was teaching classes. We went to a neighbor, and he started going, I said, now, look, don't rip the shucks. We want the big ones, you know. And we finally said, you go to the store to get boxes of them because they use them to make hot tamales as well.
Yeah.
To wrap them up. Shucks are very useful.
Well, Roy, have we got anything we missed there?
We've covered almost everything. Come and join us. It's going to be a walk-through history. We will be serving a meal, at least for some people to come. It depends on how many show up. And we have local restaurants to go by if you don't have those. No charge for coming. The fire department is going to come if you want to donate to their bucket to help them with equipment. We appreciate that.
Okay. If you want to just hang around here a few minutes, I thought Taylor was going to come over, but I don't believe she's going to make it this morning.
We'll.
But I've just pulled up the Tennessee Department of Health COVID dashboard, and we're looking at the daily cases here in Tennessee. You know, we have been at a pretty high rate for the last, since back the middle of July up through October. You know, and most of us, when we first heard this, you know, we thought we're going to be back to normal by at least, a couple, 3 months from now. This thing will kind of go away. But I think we're speaking firsthandedly. Sometimes, no matter how careful you are, you may come in contact with this thing. And I know here in Tennessee, we're one of the hot spots, supposedly, and areas like Clay County. You know, we've always kind of thought of ourselves as being kind of isolated, and most bad things don't make it into little places like this. Hold on just a second here. I need to pull up a little bit more information. Light switch on the wall. I know we're looking down through this thing. We never really thought about Clay County being at the point we're at now. And I think according to the information this morning here in Clay County, we have had a total of the last information there was 379 cases since this started, and looking on across, We have 80 active cases here in Clay County now, and we've actually had 13 deaths from the effects of the COVID virus. So, you know, it's time where, you know, it's time not to let up your guard, but to guard your health very, very carefully. And, you know, looking all across the country, you know, it's a simple thing. You know, it is aggravating to put one of those masks on. We don't really like to do that, but all day. But it's something that, you know, we're going to learn to live with it. And we're going to just have to carry on the best we can. And we, you know, I don't know, when you get on the soapbox on this thing, it is kind of scary that, you know, this thing is still here with us. But also, you know, it's time of, you know, self-protection, protecting others, you know, caring for your neighbors, and just basically just being careful. There are lots of things you can do during this period of time that, you know, that you may have not even thought about doing. A lot of it is just, you know, getting out and exploring what's around you. You know, getting in a vehicle, driving, just and looking, getting out, walk through the woods. You know, it's kind of made us look at more of the simpler things of life that we had kind of gotten away from because we didn't have time to do it. You know, we can kind of look at it, you know, like that. It's given us time to do some things that we may have forgotten that we even knew how to do. And we greatly appreciate all of the people around us, and we, as we come farther along in this, we begin to realize that we're all responsible for it, that we can't say, you know, well, someone else did this, someone else did that, that we're responsible. Self-responsibility, probably one of the most important things that we deal with on a daily basis, and it's made us more aware of that. And hopefully, you know, with the help of everyone, that this thing will, you know, it too will pass. You know, it still may be a pretty good ways away. Well, Mr. Roy, I guess I can come off my soapbox now and appreciate having you here with us today.
And we'll follow all CDC rules that are program there.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, you know, we've been real careful about. And, you know, the activities here in the courthouse, we probably won't be able to have any activities inside here because of, you know, the seating upstairs with, you know, if we look up there and we have to sit in every other row of benches, sit 6 foot apart, you know, we're looking at, you know, such a limited amount of people that could be in there. So, you know, most of those things, you know, it may be next season before we're allowed to do that. But something we are looking forward to down the road here a couple of years, and that is in 2023, this old building will be celebrating its 150th birthday.
Wow.
So, you know, that may be, we'll probably try to come up with some kind of little birthday celebration for the courthouse here. So, you know, there are a number of things to do, and we do know that lots of folks have had a rough time during this period of time. But like I said, you know, we're tough hill folks. You know, we get through most things, and we get through them by, you know, using what some folks would say, you know, the most uncommon kind, and that is common sense. And with that, I'm going to, let me see, I'll do a drawing for our winner today, and the winner is Rosanna Webb. Happy birthday. So somebody tell her that she has won the birthday cake out at the Dairy Queen. Come by and pick that up. Go over and pick up her cake. And with that, I guess it's time to say that we've got most everything put back up. We've got the livestock back in tomorrow, and I guess. Got the doors all shut down. And we'll see you again here, the good Lord willing, next Thursday morning at 9 o'clock here on WVFB-FM 101.5 Kicks Country. And with that, may the good Lord bless and keep you until we meet you then. Good day, Clay County.
Thanks for being with us today for the Clay County Corner on Kicks Country. We thank all of our interesting guests, and we thank all of our fine sponsors. Our sponsors take pride in and care about our community. So when the need arises, make sure you visit them. Or just give them a call and tell them thanks for sponsoring the Clay County Corner. So until next Thursday morning at 9, we hope you have a great week.